Welcome to the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America with Tim Matthews and Frank Bassett. Take it away, boys.
All right. Hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you today. And we've got a lot to talk about, a lot of stuff going on as we get past the first round of the FedEx playoffs in the Northern Trust, which was really just a one-man show. And we'll talk about DJ and how phenomenal he was. Got to mention Scotty Scheffler in there, too, and a few other things that might have happened. But DJ back to number one in the world and getting ready for round two, which, of course, will be at Olympia Fields Country Club, the BMW Championship, which Frank and I were at last year and had a lot of fun there. And that brings us to Frank Bassett in the Nashville studios. How you doing, Frank? Yeah, it was been a year ago or thereabouts. Timing-wise, that the second round, we were there at Medina. Remember that last year?
I remember it vividly. We had a great time. Yeah. Played a lot of golf around town and some great courses and covered the tournament and stayed there at Eaglewood Lodge, Eaglewood Resort,
Eaglewood.
Was great. And boy, shout out for those guys. How nice are they at Eaglewood? Love that.
Brendan Sweeney's personal friends that has access to everything.
Yeah, oh, Lord. It was like going back to college. It was fun. We had a great time. Yeah. Played a lot of golf, though, and that was great. Medina, what a sweet spot that place is, though.
Yeah, and we were right next to it. Our property, actually, you just cut through a fence, if you would, and we were there on the property. So, yeah, it was really cool. What about DJ? We're going to have, by the way, we have the confidence doctor himself, Dr. Bob Winter, sports psychologist, joining us here in just a couple of minutes, so stay tuned for that. But first, Frank, I was curious about what you thought about DJ. Just a phenomenal performance that he put on at the Northern Trust. Finishes with a 63. Look at these last three rounds, Frank, at the Northern Trust. 60, 64, 63. Not a bad way to win a tournament when people had been saying, hey, DJ can't always close the deal. This wasn't a major, but he certainly closed the deal at this one at the TPC Boston.
Well, let me do my DJ imitation. Amanda Baleonis asking him a question. Boy, you really really lit up the course out there, DJ. What was it like? Well, I had a good week of ball striking, and it was really good. Wow, the guy doesn't come off of center. He's just the highs and the lows are all mellowed out perfectly. Yeah. You don't know if he shot 30 under or 30 over. You just don't know.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
30 under, which was near the record. The record is Ernie Els way back when, 31 under, but 30 under for a tournament of four rounds is pretty incredible. And thrown in there was a 62. So
wait a minute, though. You know, 31 under and 30 under also, both were carded at the Tournament of Champions. The Tournament of Champions is not the Northern Trust. It's not the golf course they just played.
Right.
That 30 on that track under these circumstances and under the pressure, and we'll get to that pretty quickly about the mindset of what it's like to be in the playoffs and the hunt for that $15 million check at the end of the rainbow there in Atlanta, Georgia. That 30 stands out to me as, although it's not a 31, it stands out as one hell of a performance.
Yeah, he put on a great show. As a matter of fact, he beat Harris English by only 11 shots. and Harris English had a pretty good tournament. Normally 19 under, you're in pretty good shape, aren't you? He loses by 11 at 19 under.
Ouch.
Daniel Berger right behind him there too. Kevin Kistner and Scotty Scheffler, who had the 59 in the second round, same day that DJ had his 60, rounds out the top six guys there. So a really good tournament for a lot of these guys, but it was all DJ. And he had to wait till dusk. I mean, that was kind of weird, too, because they had a rain delay again and basically had to finish the tournament, although he could have had complete darkness and still, I think, parred the last few holes if he needed to. He was so dialed in.
Yeah. It was performance. Congratulations, DJ.
Very impressive. Very impressive to see him do it. And it was a gettable course. Let's not kid ourselves. I think yesterday, on the second hole, par five, he had 7-iron. On the second shot, 7-iron on a par five, hits it within 8 feet, gets his eagle, and you're like, okay, I guess everybody else looks at it and goes, we're all playing for second place.
D-lofted 7, making it probably a 5. Okay,
never mind. Still.
Watch the hand position.
Pretty gettable. So anyway, now again, it all leads to, he's now number one in the world, so he retakes that title as the number one player in the world as we head to the second round of the BMW Championship. So a lot of stuff that sets the table, but a lot of stuff to talk about with our guest today, Dr. Bob Winters, sports psychologist, also at the David Ledbetter School down in Orlando, and the confidence doctor who goes all over the country working with people and golfers, some college, some very amateur like Frank and I, and some professionals to get their heads straight with their golf game, and he joins us now. Dr. Bob, thanks for being with us. How are you doing today?
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, Frank. Great to be with you guys.
Hey, the doctor's making house calls out here. You're in the Midwest right now working with some great players and golf teams and all that good stuff. You travel around, too.
Yeah, I've been traveling every day for about the last 10 days, different venues. I've been some, you know, beautiful golf courses and some here in the Midwest. I was up in Fort Wayne, Indiana for a couple of days at the Sycamore Hills Golf Course designed by Jack Nicklaus. And I got to tell you, I mean, immaculate conditions, and they've had fantastic weather. I've just been really lucked out because I left, you know, the hurricane and came up here in about 85 degrees and sunshine. So, the good Lord has kind of been watching over the confidence doctor for sure. So, you know, we're having a good time. I even drove past and I drove up and stayed the night in Franklin, Tennessee, right outside, you know, your haunts, Frank. And I'll tell you what a gorgeous, you know, beautiful town that is. And I understand why you live in Nashville, because it's just a beautiful city, beautiful area, and great people.
Well, thank you so much. I diss it a lot on the show, just jokingly about Nash Vegas and Nash Patch and all that. But Nashville, Tennessee, Franklin, Tennessee, Hendersonville, Tennessee, all together, it's kind of like Altamont Springs and Orlando and whatever. It's a great place to live. It really, really is. And the topography of this part of the country, people don't realize that it's very, very hilly. I mean, it's just really a pretty rolling hills through Tennessee. Beautiful place.
It is. You know, it is beautiful, and beautiful golf courses there. And now that I've been here in the Midwest, you know, up around Indiana and Illinois, spending these, you know, many, many days with junior players, college teams, and a lot of, you know, young touring professionals as well. It's just amazing, you know, the wealth of talent over the last 15, 20 years that, you know, they're sort of the offspring of the Tiger Woods generation. And we talk about, you know, these Tiger-like performances that DJ just put on yesterday. I mean, they were all sort of, you know, precipitated by, you know, Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, you know, really going for broke, going, you know, charging. You can't birdie the first hole, you can't birdie them all. So it's sort of a mindset, a mood set. And all of these players are just going out and just really lighting it up because they realize, you know, what's the whole goal of in golf? It's to get the ball, you know, in the hole in the fewest amount of strokes, no matter what it looks like. And at the end of the day, no one really asks you really, you know, how you did. They don't need a dissertation on that. They just ask you what you shot. And I got to tell you, when I listen to like Scottie Scheffler shooting 59, DJ shooting 60, you hear them say the same thing. And I always say it is the ultimate cliche in golf. And that is, I just played my game and I played one shot at a time. But that's the secret, isn't it? To learn how to do that and apply it in a pressure-like situation.
Yeah, and I think probably keeping your shower shoes clean is imperative in the world of baseball. I mean, golf. back to an old movie that we all enjoyed years ago, Bull Durham. But all the cliches that come out are just, you know, by the grace of God, I made it through, and boy, my ball striking was great. And, you know, what do you say when you have that many rounds in the 60s and win a golf tournament? Well, let's see. He was 24 shots better than Tiger Woods. 24 shots better than Tiger Woods.
That's... Well, you know, when you get a player, you know, that is really in the groove like DJ, and let's make no mistake about it, you know, this championship, you know, the Northern Trust, you know, TPC Boston, it's no slouch. Mm-hmm. But when you've got a player like DJ, who is this big athletic statue, if you will, and he's actually taking, you know, that driver and just ripping it as accurately and as long. I mean, it's really what we used to call in the old days on tour, stupid long. I mean, that's really what it was, really stupid long, but unbelievably accurate. But also, you know, his putting, the strokes gained in the field. You know, he was, third in overall driving distance, but driving accuracy, I think he was right there at the top. So when you drive it well, you're hitting every green. He hit every green in regulation on yesterday's round or Sunday's round. And you're making putts and you're leading the field in putting. There's not much else that you can do. So when you're firing on all cylinders, it's pretty easy to know who's going to win this tournament. But to dominate like that, I haven't seen or heard of a domination like that since maybe Tiger won the U.S. Open out west. By what? He won something like 14, 15 shots, that one year. Yes, it was a total domination. Yeah. And this whole season, Frank and Tim, has been sort of a different, animal for sure because of all of the pandemic and all the shutdowns, lockdowns, the enforced quarantines and start, stop. So most of these guys are trying to get out. They're just, they're just feeling great and thankful that they have a chance to play, and when they get a chance to play, let's just see how low we can go. I mean, that's really the whole mindset there.
Well, Tim and I were talking last week when we wanted you back on the show because you used to contribute a lot to Golf Talk America, and we'd love to have you even more going forward based on just the fact that this year, 2020, however incredible it is been tough on everybody. I mean, I'm talking from the local guy who's serving hamburgers at McDonald's all the way up to the top of the PGA Tour. How difficult is it with on the tour now with, first all the testing and the COVID and the start-stop, which began right at 10:40 or 9:45, 10 o'clock in Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida, on Thursday evening when we all got that text that said, it's over, we're shutting down. Wow. Now you get out there and you're trying to play. The competition is so, so stiff going into the FedEx Cup. There's no doubt about it. Just getting there is an incredible feat to make the 30. But all the other aspects that come into play at this point, and that's why I really wanted you on, Doc, because you can speak to what's going on in their heads. No fans, no family, different. They can't go to their favorite restaurants. You can't interact with people like you used to. The human species needs touchy-feely. We need to interact with each other, and we're just going to throw that out there. And Tim, if you've got something to add to it, and let Dr. Bob go with this.
No, I'm curious what you think about it. How do you overcome all this? It's very, very odd, once-in-a-lifetime kind of a season for these guys.
Well, it really is. And one of the things that you have to do, we always talk about, consistency being a great factor in golf. Well, even more important than consistency is the ability to adapt and adjust to whatever situation is in front of you. There is an old Zen saying that says, the obstacle in the road is still the road. You have to find a way to get around it, to get over it, and you just have to deal with it. And so with all of this enforcement, these quarantines, lockdowns, what a majority of these professionals and many of them that I'm working with, I was telling them, get yourself ready. Use this time and be proactive. Be productive. Do whatever you can. Chip, putt, do flexibility, strength training, yoga, mind control, do meditation, visualization exercises, whatever happens, because the clock is always ticking. And then when we do open up and get a chance to go perform, you want to be absolutely ready. In fact, I'm getting ready to talk to, some college teams about this because their fall season has been put on the shelf, by the NCAA. But I'm just telling them is that championships just aren't won on the day of competition. They are won days, weeks, months, even years ahead with championship preparation, championship nutrition, good thinking, physical training. So you've got to get yourself ready. Now, one of the things, that we've encountered is we don't have any fans. Without the fans, you don't have something that we call in psychology emotional contagion. Like the pandemic is very contagious. Fever, the fan fever is contagious. It really helps a lot of players thrive on that emotion. And when players don't have that, they don't have that approval from the fans. And a lot of times I see players out there 200 yards, they actually always listen to the crowd to see, you know, how close the ball is. If there's no noise at all, they go, oh, I must not have hit that well. So that's really what they're dealing with now almost every week for the past few weeks. They're hitting it almost as when they were like amateurs again. They really don't know how well or how poorly, you know, their shot turned out, if they have sort of a blind shot or if they have, you know, some crevices in the green.
Dr. Bob, let me interrupt you right there, because you said something that sparked something in my brain. I'm out there, I'm a PGA Tour professional, and I thrive on, you know, I want to know how close that ball is. I've just hit a 227-yard shot into an elevated green, back to front or front to back, whatever. Tough shot. I don't know where it is. So all of a sudden now, would it be fair to say that the emotional roller coaster that occurs because you don't know, so are you down, are you up, you don't get the fan feedback, so the euphoria is not there. So does it put you kind of on a roller coaster at that point?
I don't know if it puts you on a roller coaster, but it does introduce the seed of, I don't want to say doubt, it's more of a questioning mindset.
Uncertainty.
Where'd that go? Yeah, where did that go? You know, what happened right there? And the great thing about crowds and fans and the euphoria is that one shot by a PGA or LPGA Tour professional, one shot can really get you going. The same thing as an amateur. I don't care if you're a 20 handicap or a 10 handicap or scratch. It's that one shot that you can really get some good feedback from that creates positive momentum. And so you can kind of feed off that, but that's really, they're not getting that. And so it really, you know, takes a little bit more dedication, a little bit more sort of what I call mental and mood control, arousal control, to keep yourself invested, to keep yourself going. Now people say, well, then what about somebody like Dustin Johnson? Now, Dustin Johnson is a unique unicorn out there in the world of athletes, because Dustin has something, and I want to explain this, you know, because I've actually been talking about this for the last few weeks. It's a concept that I created called vested indifference. Vested indifference means I'm invested. My intention is to hit this shot as well as I possibly can. I know it's a big shot. It's a big tournament. It's for a lot of money. But there is also a psychological and physiological indifference to whatever happens to the shot. So I'm investing my energy and I expect good things to happen. But if they don't, you know, I'm going to be indifferent to it. So I can accept that result. Dustin Johnson is a perfect example of having neutral values. Not too high, not too low. So he has vested indifference on every golf shot, every round he plays. And that is really what protects him. A lot of people say he hasn't been able to close the deal on a lot of these big tournaments. Well, if you listen to him and you listen to some of the feedback that he gives you, the reporters, he says, hey, you know, I just did my thing. I played one shot. You know, we're playing for a lot of money. It's just another tournament. So each tournament that he plays, whether it's a U.S. Open, a Masters, or it could be the Peter Pan Invitational, each one is viewed the very same. You know, no one is greater or less than another. And that helps a player like Dustin Johnson, because it allows them to play golf and beat the golf course one shot at a time without all of this psychological what I call sort of paramount importance that I'm putting on this event. So that's something that, you know, I've been working on, this whole notion of vested indifference. And I think if players can actually do that, they won't put so much pressure on themselves, and they can go out and allow themselves to play great golf, beat the golf course, and really play within themselves and play to their talent capabilities.
I think you explained that really well. Again, we're joined by Dr. Bob Winters, sports psychologist, and I was actually going to ask you about his attitude. It seems to be, lackadaisical, and I don't really care. It's who he is. I don't think his blood pressure goes up or down, you know, more than 2 degrees when he's playing around to golf. It is what it is, and he's done a great job. What is it now, Frank? 22 wins he has on the PGA Tour. So something is working. He doesn't have all the majors that some people think he could have or other guys have. But he's had a phenomenal career and certainly heading for the Hall of Fame in golf. But I did want to ask you, Dr. Bob, about another guy that we talk about on this show an awful lot as we head into the next round. near you there in Indiana over at Olympia Fields for the BMW Championship. That, of course, would be Jordan Spieth, who did not make the cut at the Northern Trust and is now out of the playoffs. He actually went backwards. He started at 100. Now he finished at 107 after the Northern Trust. So he is out, along with a lot of other pretty prestigious guys that also didn't make it, including Brooks Koepka and Ricky Fowler and Justin Rose and Phil. I mean, there's a lot of guys that are not going to be playing anymore. But in Spieth's case, when you get into his head, if you could, is that where his problems are? We all know about the drought and how long it's been, and everybody's pulling for him, but he still seems to be stuck in quicksand. Is it in his head, the problems?
Well, I don't know, because I can't speak for Jordan. I haven't ever spoken with Jordan. I have been someone who's been watching him quite closely ever since, he won, Chambers Bay up in Washington. The one thing I can tell you about Jordan Spieth is he is an emotional reactor. I mean, he reacts to almost every shot, good or bad. He thrives on this emotional contagion. He can really create a lot of positive energy, positive momentum, especially around the green. He actually sort of just thrives on that. He thrives on the wedge shots, the chip shots, and his putts. And if those things aren't going, those have been his staple. That's been his bread and butter. And when there's been some suspicion, there's been some sort of doubt, and he actually misses a few here and there, that starts to actually, start to work on you a little bit. And I think without the crowds, without, that emotional support, I think perhaps, it doesn't work, as well for a Jordan Spieth as it does for a Dustin Johnson. Because Dustin, let's face it, I mean, he's number one in the world now. He's won a lot of money. He's played for 13 seasons. He's quite financially, as we say, secure. Whether he's playing for $1 million or he's playing for $10,000 or he's playing for $20 million, I think we would see the same thing, out of Dustin Johnson day in, day out. And that is the beauty. That is the genius of someone like a Dustin Johnson. Now, a lot of players get very streaky and they run for 3, 4, 5 weeks. But that's the whole thing about, the PGA Tour. Just for example, a player that, I love and I've worked with before in the past is Steven Yeager. He played for University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. And here he is on the Korn Ferry Tour. He misses three tournaments, misses three straight cuts, goes into his practice round, doesn't hit the ball very well. And then he goes out in the first round. And then at the end of the tournament, he hoists the trophy. Now, what's that all about? And I think every player on tour realizes the difference between being really good and being, out of the money and missing the cut. We're only talking about a fraction of an inch as far as if you're going to sit there and say, what's the difference between this player and that player? It could be a few putts here, a few missed shots here, just a couple. But, those in the value of a stroke, and that's for everyone listening, is that when you do learn the mental discipline of giving each shot your very best effort, that becomes the dominant habit. And that's really the difference between Dustin Johnson, clearing Harris English by 11 shots, because in this tournament, he made every shot count. And I tell you, that's a psychological skill, and it's something I've been teaching now for a long, long time. And people say, well, how many did you have? Because that's the first thing people ask you, Tim or Frank, when you come in. They don't ask you, hey, did you stay emotionally stable out there? Did you have vested indifference on every shot? They don't ask you that. All they want to ask is, hey, how'd you do? What'd you shoot? And it's all about the score. It's all about the result. So these tour players have trained themselves to make every shot a moment in time, to giving it their best, and day after day, shot after shot. And when you start getting your groove on and you start finding that positive momentum, that's when you start to play great golf. But I tell you what, for a lot of players like Jordan Spieth, without the crowd and without having some positive, results, it does start to wear on you. It really does. And it makes you question, am I doing the right things? And then you have to actually go back and say, what did I do when I was winning? Am I doing something different now? And what's the formula? So everyone has to find that personal playing philosophy for them to play well. And that's why I've always said the game of golf, G-O-L-F, means that you gravitate to an optimum level of functioning. For a Dustin Johnson, It's vested indifference. You know, it's vanilla, shot after shot after shot, because that's his personality. For Jordan Spieth, you know, it's a little bit different. It's a little bit more emotional.
That's exactly the answer that I thought we were going to get. And Spieth does have that emotion. We love it when he's winning. It kind of has been working against him, maybe, in the last few years, but we'll see if he gets out of that hole. Dr. Bob Winters, sports psychologist, joining us here on Golf Talk America. I am also curious about what happened in the final round at the Northern Trust, and that is Louis Oosthuizen. Okay, so let's set the scene. You're trying to get into the top 70. That gets you to the next round. That gets you the BMW Championship. So there's kind of a tournament within the tournament of moving on. And Oosthuizen, as the sun was going down, it was getting dark, is in the middle of the 18th fairway and needs to get a birdie to move into the final spot, the number 70 spot, which he gets it on the green and two putts for his birdie. It's a par five, two putts for his birdie, and does exactly what he knew he had to do. But he had a long delay, knew what was on the table. And I'm curious, for a lot of us, it might be Frank, might be me, in a similar situation, but oh, let's say it's for $50 or $20. You've got some pressure on you, and you've got to think about the shot, which is what golf is, right? You've got a lot of time to consider the next shot. What's the psychology? What should Oosthuizen have been thinking? What should we all be thinking when we need to get a birdie on that final hole, and you got a lot of pressure, even if it's internal, even if it's small by amateur standards? What is it that you need to be thinking? Because Oosthuizen came through in the clutch when he knew there was an awful lot on the line.
Well, I'm a steak eater, and I don't like to have a lot of fat, a lot of gristle on my steak. So I'm always telling my players, let's keep this shot, let's keep this round clean. What that means is we cut away all of the psychological fat, all of this perceptual bombardment that, oh, this is what this shot is for. This is what it could mean. Because when we take a look at pressure, Tim and Frank, is when we have a factor or any combination of factors that increases the importance of us wanting to perform well. So when we make a shot more valuable and bigger than what it is, we tend to actually sort of, I hate to say the word, choke up, we tighten up, we actually fail, and we, you know, sabotage our talent. So the thing for Louis Oosthuizen is he was keeping it lean, meaning, hey, I've got 175 yards. It's 175 yards. Now, if we can cut out all of that psychological mumbo jumbo for what it stands for what it could mean, and looking ahead, he has to be right here in the present moment. And it's, you know, 175 yards. This is what I do. I've hit this shot thousands of times. And you have to stay on task. And when we bring things down to the physical task, and you stay on task, adhere to your routine, and actually perform the way that you know you have trained yourself to perform, that's really what it is. And that's really the concept of vested indifference. You understand, you know, I expect good things to happen, but I can live with whatever it is because I am now doing something and I'm trusting my automated, you know, skill development, my motor learning, my motor memory to come through. I've done this before. So step in there, hit the shot. It's 175 yards. Don't make it any bigger or less than it is. A shot is a shot is a shot. And it's much easier to talk about than it is to do. But that's what, you know, these men and women have trained themselves to do. They have trained themselves to step in and execute the shot. And that's really what Louis did.
Okay, on an amateur level, well said. And let's talk about this for a minute. That boy, that second guy is really good. That's that second guy in there is consistent. The second putt, the second drive, yeah. The second whatever. I playing golf yesterday at my club with our group and one of my very, very close friends. And he's an excellent, excellent player. I mean, really, really good, consistent, high draw drives. Oh, just beautiful player. He proceeds to hook one, OB, on number 14. So he throws another one down and stripes it down the middle. Does the same thing on 15 and stripes it down the middle. What's going on there? Why do we always, Dr. Bob, come back with that second shot? Is it because it doesn't matter as much now that we're hitting three or what?
Well, you're halfway right there, Frank. It is, you know, the worst that has happened has occurred. So what we fear might have happened, we actually sort of produce, okay? And that's the ironic process theory. When you step into a hole and there's a lot of trouble left, like out of bounds left, what do most of us do? And all of us have been guilty of this. We say to ourselves, don't hit it left. Where does the ball go? It goes left. And that's the and that's the irony of the process. So, you know, when a player hits a shot out of bounds left and they step up, you know, with their second ball. Now, this is a whole new shot. But what most people fail to realize is that there is this ongoing movement involvement cycle within the brain. You're getting feedback of what just happened. So when you step up with the second ball, you can make an unbelievable brain adjustment to the body and say, okay, I knew I was a little quick from the top. Let's just slow it down. And you step up and you stripe it. But, you know, a biggest factor, and I would say it'd be 70 to 80%, is that the worst that has happened has already happened. Now, let's do what we're supposed to be doing here. Let's readjust, you know, our body set and let's hit that shot. And that's really, you know, what happens. Now, you run into problems when you hit hook one left, you hit another one left, and you hit another one left, you know, and you kind of do a 10. And you kind of do a 10 cup.
You've been watching my game. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
And you kind of do a 10 cup. And then, you know, what's the solution there? You get on the phone and you call Dr. Bob Winters, the confidence doctor, and I can help you out with that. But that's really, we've seen it a thousand times, especially in putting. We're sort of going through a lot of self-talk. We start getting over this six-footer and say, hey, this is a big one. You really have to make it. What happens, Frank and Tim, is that we have so much triosity. We want it so bad that we're not really putting a fluid and flowing stroke. We're putting more of an over-controlling, steering, and a coercive stroke versus just stepping up and letting the putter hit the ball solid. And I remember, you know, playing with Arnold Palmer many years ago, about 2007, and he said to me, he goes, Bob, what are you doing? And I go, what do you mean? He goes, you're making a lot of putts. What the hell's going on? I looked at him, I said, it was something you told me many, many years ago. If I was going to, you know, really putt well, to keep my head still, to believe the ball was going to go, really have a good line of where you wanted the ball to go, but hit it solid and hit it like you wanted to make it. And he looked at me and he gave me, you know, that great Arnie grin. He goes, I told you that? And I go, yeah. And then he looked at me and he goes, well, hell, I'd better start doing that, huh? And I said, yeah. And I said, you better.
That's like good advice.
And we actually went on to play the next 8 or 9 holes. We're playing in his Bay Hill shootout. And Arnold made about 4 or 5 putts from like 20 feet and less in. And he grabs me after by the shoulders. And Arnold, I mean, even in his 70s, was a powerful man, big arms, grabbed me. He goes, you know, you can talk about hitting 300-yard drives all you want. He goes, but there's nothing like making putts to make you feel like a winner. And I agree with, you know, the king 100% there. Sure. But that's really what happens there, Frank and Tim. That's really what's going on with that second shot theory.
Well, that's great stuff. I'm sorry, Tim. Go ahead.
You mentioned the power game, so I wanted to, and I know you're a busy guy, so we don't want to take up all your time, Dr. Bob, but I'm taking notes, so thank you for having me.
Okay, all right.
Send him a bill. I'm laying on the couch. Yeah, I'm laying on the couch while we're talking right here. But you talk about the power game, and I just want to ask you about DeChambeau. He's obviously taking the world by storm, if you will, on the tour and gotten everybody's attention because of what he's done. Part of it is psychological. Certainly a lot of it is physical. He's gotten a lot bigger, and his mechanics and everything is all about the angles and everything else he can do. But there's certainly a psychological part of, if I can dominate this golf course, if I can hit the ball farther and therefore have wedges in my hands and not 7 irons and 6 irons in my hands, I not only feel better about my game, but I think I might also intimidate some of the guys that I'm with who are now 40 yards or 50 yards behind where he is. The power game, as much as you just said, putting is very big, and it makes you feel great when you make those putts. Are the young kids today, the ones you're going to go talk to at colleges today and different golf teams, are they all thinking, I got to be able to power that ball out there because it does give me a psychological advantage?
Well, I was just, you know, giving a lesson to a great junior player from outside Chicago, Illinois yesterday. And this young man, 16 years old, he's probably about 6 foot, maybe about 170 pounds. And he's driving the ball 340, 350 yards. And he's hitting, you know, these par fives, 565, 570 yards in two. I mean, he's hitting like driver 5-iron, driver 4-iron. And, you know, the young people of today are just really learning how to hit it powerful. Now, with Bryson DeChambeau, and the thing I tell all, you know, my young students, young tour players, is that there's a very fine curtain between power and accuracy and building yourself up. Because what I'm seeing with people wanting to develop this power game, I'm seeing a large increase in self-limiting injuries. I mean, a lot of people are really, you know, tearing muscle, they're straining muscles, they're, you know, they're having a lot of back aches. So I don't know if we're actually, you know, pushing too much weight. Now, believe me, I'm a big, big advocate of weight training, of flexibility, speed training, strength training. But I think you have to, you know, really have a nice balance. Everything in golf, as in life, you have to have a nice balanced perspective. And Bryson, if he feels, you know, he can get an edge there, that's great. You know, all of the science stuff, all the angles, it reminds me many years ago with a wonderful friend and a great, great instructor and great player was Bobby Clampett. When he had Homer Kelly's The Golf Machine, when he was talking about power loading and levers and angles, and he came in and gave, you know, the great British Open post-round interview, and everybody thought, who's the nuclear scientist that we're talking to here? Because he kind of left everybody baffled. So what you have to understand is different strokes for different folks. But the power game, it is here. It's here to stay. But when I see Bryson DeChambeau and some of his swings he's making, I mean, it looks like he's really, you know, in the long drive competition. I mean, he's just out there, just grip it, you know, and rip it, you know, kind of AKA John Daly. But, you know, if you think about John and winning in 1991 at Cricket Stick, you know, here, you know, outside Indianapolis, I mean, the thing he was doing was Squeaky Medlin on the bag, his caddy, you know, Squeaky would tell him, just remember one thing, kill. And that was John Daly's, you know, thought. As he stepped into the ball, he would just kill it. And he had that white-headed ceramic driver. And he was actually hitting the ball over angles that architect Pete Dye never envisioned anybody could carry some of these angles, you know, into his architectural design at Crooked Stick. And John Daly wins. So the power game, we talk about Jack Nicklaus. When Jack Nicklaus was Fat Jack, when he was, you know, that's what he was known as, and before he lost all his weight, Jack Nicklaus could hit his 1-iron, 2-iron soft and high into some of these par fives, to which, you know, Bobby Jones, you know, said he plays a game with which I'm not familiar. And I heard Jack Nicklaus talk about that, you know, with some of these, you know, new players, they play a game I'm not familiar with. So it's sort of, you know, turnabout's fair play, is that Jack Nicklaus had a huge advantage years ago, as like some of the young players do today. But I mean, I love the power game, but I got to tell you, when you are powering it, you better be really accurate with it. And I got to tell you, with someone like Dustin Johnson hitting it as long and as accurate, I got to tell you, I mean, hey, hats off to DJ and everybody who can hit a driver that long, that far, because I'm in awe of it because I can't hit it. When people, you know, watch me play, they say, you know, show me that power ball. I said, I can't show you a power ball, but I will show you a pretty shot. that's really how I deal with it. I say, this ball is going to go down the middle of the fairway. And I've always said that if you can actually drive the ball accurately, AKA Tommy Bolt. Tommy Bolt was one of the biggest advocates of driving it straight. If you can drive your ball straight and put it in, you know, a position for your second shot, that gives you a huge advantage. I don't know if that answers your question, Tim.
Yeah,
you know, there's so many players that really want to, you know, put so much emphasis on the power game. I just want to make sure that, you know, by gaining power, that you aren't sacrificing accuracy, consistency, and repeatability just to hit the ball longer. Because over my career, I've had a lot of guys that actually wanted to hit 5, 10, 15 yards longer, but, you know, to the expense they didn't, you know, work on their short game, their putting, and, you know, that's the bread and butter right there. You know, you've got to get the ball in the hole from around the green from 100 yards and in. So for the amateurs listening, you know, instead of trying to add another 5, 10, 15 yards to your driver, you know, work on that short game and your wedges. It will really pay off in lower scores.
Dr. Bob, there's a golf course that we're both very familiar with. It's a public golf course right there in the middle of Orlando in Winter Park, that little nine-hole golf course that they did.
Yeah.
Where I used to go when I was in Orlando, I'd just jump out there to play a quick nine and invariably get with, you know, some of the older gentlemen, which, you know, I'm pushing that now, but I'd just crush it past them. But I was left or I was right or somewhere else, and they would just play it right. They'd bet with me, you know, a few dollars, right down the middle, on the green, one or two putt, done. They beat my fanny every time. So I very well can relate to the accuracy and the lack of accuracy. I kind of use the analogy, NASA really wouldn't want to launch that moonshot 1/100th of a degree off, would they?
No, not at all. And the Winter Park Golf Course, that's a Donald Ross design,
it
correct?
Is. Yes, it is. Yeah,
it is.
Great little course.
And Frank, by the way, you know, a lot of people are still looking for you to pay, you know, some greens fees that you just actually <Yeah. laughs>
Oh, Champions Gate. Oh, yeah. Okay. David Ledbetter's place. Never mind.
No. I'm just teasing, Frank. Yeah. But it's a beautiful golf course. And I know that a lot of the Golf Channel people, Rich Lerner, Brandel Chamblee, and all those folks, they go out there and they rave about it all the time. It's a great, great nine-hole facility.
Yeah, it really is. But a lot of the old guys, and it reminds me of Jack Lemmon in the movie Bagger Vance, where he's just got his little pull cart and just walking down the fairway, just enjoying the walk.
And taking your money. And taking your money every time.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Bob, we do appreciate your time. We know you're very, very busy, and you got a lot of stuff going. As you said, during this corona time, you're making a lot of house calls, and a lot of people used to probably, and they will in the future, come to you, and now you kind of got to get to them. But I take my hat off. I think you help a lot of people with the game of golf, but also kind of the game of life too, because a lot of what you say can translate right from the golf course into your everyday life about staying calm and thinking about the right things, having the right mindset. Very, very valuable. People want to know more about you or things that you've done, philosophies and different things. Is there a website that people can go to?
Yeah, we have, you know, two or three websites where you can get a hold of me. The first one would be my name, drbobwinters.com, drbobwinters.com. And then, you know, my newer website, theconfidencedoctor.com. And on the Confidence Doctor website, we have a whole new video series about the 10 mental keys to great putting, what you already know, but you need to hear again. So you can actually go in and take advantage of that. And then you can always go into davidledbetter.com. And I really want to, you know, take this time, Tim and Frank, to talk about a whole new series that I created for Ledbetter University. And it is talked about tournament thoughts for great golf, taking it to the course. And what I've done, I've created 13 audio chapters that you just listen to, and you do in sort of this hypnotic, meditative trance state. We actually take you from 2 or 3 days before the competition, the night before the competition, driving to the competition, arriving to the golf course, and actually learning how to play one shot at a time, you know, putting the wheels back on. So it's something at Ledbetter University, you know, .com that people can take a look at. It's something very new, very exciting. It's no one in the world has done it before. And I've taken 40, 45 years of my playing and coaching and sports psychology experience and put it there in a format. And people go, well, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to think? So they can kind of go on the Ledbetter University online course series and actually sign up for that. But the biggest thing, you know, that I said, Tim and Frank, my whole career is that the moment that you change your mind, you change your game. And you want to change it, you know, for the productive and the positive, because what I actually preach is possibility thinking. You know, if you can think it, it's possible and you can achieve it. And that's really what we're doing. And I'll tell you what, I've been very blessed to have great friends like you to let me, you know, come on and spread, you know, the good word. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dr. Bob. Well, thank you, Bob. We always appreciate it. Yes, absolutely.
All right, guys. Have a great day. We'll see you on the golf course.
Okay. See you after. Right. Be safe.
Take
see
care.
You soon.
Bye.
Take care. Dr. Bob Winters, sports psychologist. Really helpful, Frank. Yeah, I tell you, every time we talk with him, and again, check out those websites that he talked about too, if you're out there listening. But really helpful because he is, I mean, you do feel like you're getting help. I mean, he's very calming. His voice is very soothing. It's like, hey, don't panic, because I'm kind of that guy that's maybe not DJ. I get a little bit more.
No, no.
I can't believe it. You know, and no. You're like, oh my, and you gotta overcome that, right? Because they're like, next shot. Try to be indifferent. I got to try to be more indifferent.
Tim, play more golf with your priest. It'll help.
You know what? I did, Frank, it's funny you'd say that. Last week, I played with my minister's son,
who also happens to have gone
to seminary, so he's a minister as well. But he's younger, you know, he's only 25 or 26 or something like that. And while it was fun and I enjoyed it and I played with him before, I did have to tap the brakes a little bit. I kind of had to, Tim, it's just a round of golf, you know? I mean, don't be, not that I normally throw clubs and have a fit, but, you know, I might occasionally get a little angry at a bad shot, and I had to kind of be like, okay, calm it down. So I should play with more religious people, maybe. More priests, you're right. More rabbis and priests and ministers would be a good thing for me.
Great funny story before we get out of here is my first year of marshalling when I lived in Ponte Vedra Beach was the first year that the TPC, as it was known in those days, was played on the new TPC stadium course. And I was one of the marshals in the landing area on number 15, par 4. As Johnny Miller hooked a shot, and it was stymied dead behind a tree. Now, a whole group of us were marshals on that hole, and my marshal beside me was my Methodist minister. As Johnny walks up, and proceeds to say, well, God, whatever. And then he looked up, and I looked at Johnny, and I said, hey, this is my minister right here. Yeah, and he went, oh, my Lord. And he spent, it felt like an hour, but 2 minutes apologizing.
Trying to get back into heaven.
Yeah, exactly. They locked the doors on me. I'm out. Anyway,
love
Dr. Bob and love listening to him. And I think it's really valuable for our listeners, for our all of our listeners at Club Corp, our sponsor, as well as the French Lick Resort, and as well as Morning Read, where you can find us, morningread.com, to listen to this show maybe a couple of times and listen to Dr. Bob and not us as much. But he is... I've played with him. He's pretty incredible to be around. He can calm you. He can make you play better. He's the consummate. He's like Coach Hugh Durham was from Georgia, the consummate coach the whole time. He's a very helpful guy and free with his time.
Things,
great guy with his time. So,
Before we go, congratulations to Sofia Popov.
Yeah.
She's from Germany, and she won the AIG Women's Open over in Scotland. And it came out of nowhere, and you never heard of her name because I believe she went in ranked 304th in the world, the women's world of golf, and wins the AIG Women's Open. So congratulations to her for coming out of nowhere. It's always great to see those kind of John Daly stories, someone winning a big tournament that they had no expectation, and neither did anybody else, of ever winning it. So she wins the Women's British Open, if you will. And also, is Mr. Mickelson... Phil, getting ready to play on a different tour?
He certainly is going to make his... Here's the kicker on this. Phil's going to make his debut on PGA Tour Champions this week. And as a matter of fact, the tournament is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, because they're doing two tournaments up at Big Cedar. So guess who? Our good friend who became a broadcaster, former PGA champion. It's his birthday. Monday of this week is his birthday. And he's making his debut on his birthday, first time ever anyone's done that, on PGA Tour Champions, Rich Beam. And poor Rich is getting overshadowed again by Phil. I mean, come on, you know?
Yeah. Oops.
Yeah. Come on, Phil.
Should be fun. It's worth watching to see Phil's first endeavor.
Is.
He just turned 50 a couple months ago, right?
He did.
And so he's going to give it a shot, so we'll see. Yeah. You would certainly expect him to be near the winner's circle if he doesn't win the whole thing. But, because he's still competing very, very strongly. As we said, he just missed making it to the next round at the BMW Championship.
Yeah.
And still competing with the young guys.
Finished 75th. just a bit outside.
Should be fun. Should be fun.
It should be all a right. fun week.
We are done. We are out of here. And as Frank said, thank you to French Slick. Thank you to Club Corp. Go to clubcorp.com to find out more about a course near you that you can test out. Get in the driver's seat. Give it a run. And if you like it, you join. And you can also be a part of over 250 courses and clubs all around the United States. Clubcorp.com. Thank you to Dr. Bob Winters for being with us. We do appreciate it. Thanks to all of you for listening. As always, for Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. We appreciate it, and please remember to join us next time right here on Golf Talk America.